Welcome to Left Out on WRCT 88.3 FM. Left Out is a public affairs program dedicated to presenting news and views from a perspective left out of the mainstream news. I'm Robert Harper.
I'm Danny Slater.
Today's program is produced by Jason Togier. Listeners are welcome to call us at 412-621-WRCT, which is 9728, or on campus at 268-WRCT, also 9728. And we can also receive email if you wish to send us mail during the program. We'll be monitoring it. The best address to use is Robert or Bob at leftout.info.
We have a couple of announcements today before we get into our topics. First of all, Amy Goodman, who is the host of Democracy Now!, which you can hear daily at 8 o'clock on WRCT, her news show called Democracy Now!, she won the Thomas Merton Award, and she'll be coming to Pittsburgh to collect the award. And I urge you to listen to the show and every day at 8 o'clock because it's an excellent show. And just, for example, the coverage of the Haiti coup has been excellent and totally different from any other coverage that I've seen on that story. Another bit of news is that tonight you can watch the movie Uncovered, The Whole Truth About the Iraq War. We've talked about that movie on this show before, and that movie is showing tonight at Carnegie Mellon and McConomy Auditorium in the University Center at 8 o'clock. Admission is free and open to the public, and there's free parking in the garage on Forbes Avenue next to the University Center. So come on over and watch the movie. You'll learn something.
And we'll be moderating a discussion after the showing.
Right. So the first topic for today is Pittsburgh's financial crisis, and to help us talk about that, we have a visitor who's here in the studio with us, Chris Sarosky. He's a journalist. He's a former Pittsburgh reporter. He's the Democratic committee man in Squirrel Hill and a board member of the 14th Ward Democratic Club. So Chris, can you give us a summary of Pittsburgh's financial woes?
Sure. About 6 hours. First of all, thanks a lot, Bob and Danny, for having me here. I appreciate it a lot.
It's our pleasure.
Raises my profile. I also want to note that I'm taking a couple of classes at Pitt's Graduate School of Public and International Affairs. One of the classes is about financing city services, and the instructor was there at the inception, really, of the state's distressed city legislation. He's been a coordinator for 3 or 4 communities, including Clareton, Scranton, Wilkinsburg also, I believe. So I'm really, every week I get a real insight from somebody who's been in the middle of it for 15 years. His name is David Miller. He's also on the Southwest Pennsylvania Commission, and he's the assistant dean at GISPIA. So first thing clearly to address is, you know, what's the structure or what's going on with the financial recovery plans. First of all, there are two panels or two oversight committees, I guess you'd call them, that are working at the same time on a recovery plan for Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's $40 million, I guess you'd say, in debt. They've got a budget deficit of $40 million. They've been operating in the red for 3 years. Okay, so first of all, there's this act that I mentioned. It's called Act 47. It was instituted 15 years ago. It was essentially written by the state legislature to help small industrial towns in the Monongahela Valley, especially the Steel Valley of Pittsburgh. These towns, they lost all their government capacity. They fell apart. They couldn't run themselves. They couldn't provide public services. So the state came up with a kind of a law and a plan that would bail them out.
Is this the law that David Miller was part of writing?
That's right. That's right. He was part of writing that. It's called Act 47. You've probably heard a lot about that. Essentially, under the act, there are two organizations, a Philadelphia kind of management firm and a Pittsburgh law firm, Eckerd Siemens. They're working in tandem to come up with a financial recovery plan for the city. They've got about 60 days to do that. And when they come up with a plan, they have to submit it to City Council. City Council gives a thumbs up or thumbs down on the entire recovery plan. That includes everything from recommendations for new taxes, recommendations for cutting city services, just about anything they can come up with. Some of the drastic things clearly would be raising taxes on commuters. That's one thing city politicians are hoping for. But of course, the state politicians, predominantly Republican suburban legislators, don't want that. because of that, that's where the second board comes in. There's something called the kind of colloquially being called the oversight board. That board consists of five, you may have heard about it in the news, five white men who are working on their own plan, largely considered to be more of a Republican plan. A number of the members were appointed by Republican legislators. They're working on a plan, or really they're working on overseeing a plan, a recovery plan that would be written by the city. That has to be written in an even shorter time frame. The city council writes that, submits it to the oversight board. The oversight board decides whether or not it's acceptable. It goes back for approval. So basically, we've got a very confusing, very unprecedented, a historic situation, really, in state government and local government affairs, a historic situation where two outfits are working on financial recovery plans for one city. Just to put it in a little bit of perspective, Philadelphia, for 10 years now, has had its own oversight board, but they did not also have an Act 47 committee working on a financial recovery plan.
Yeah, I wonder if you could explain what is the legal basis for this oversight board. So the Act 47 board, that was part of the city appealing for so-called Act 47 status.
For distressed status,
which we can talk more about. So what is the legal basis for this other board, this oversight board?
Yeah, the oversight board is also state legegislation. It's House Bill 2006. And it's officially called the Intergovernmental Cooperation Authority. And Philadelphia has something, the acronym is PICA. I'm not sure if it's exactly the same name, but it's along the same lines. So it's purported to be a bipartisan piece of legislation.
I see. So it was a specific act of the state legislature in response to Pittsburgh's filing for a distressed city status?
It was being discussed and hashed out before, I believe, before the distressed city status was requested, and there just wasn't agreement reached in time to kind of, I guess you'd say, beat Act 47 to the punch.
Oh, I see.
So I want to mention that on our webpage, it's leftout.info. On that webpage, you can find all the topics we're talking about today, including links to various reports and so on about this and other topics. There's a report called the Municipalities Financial Recovery Act Consultative Evaluation.
Right. That's also available on the City of Pittsburgh website. You go to the City Council page. Oh, no, my mistake. The Oversight Board legislation is available there. I'm not quite sure if this is available, but
it's available on our website.
Right.
Okay, so we have these two boards. We have this Oversight Board, and we have the Act 47 Board. And I think you said the Act 47 Board will act first. Is that correct, or is the City Council has to act first on this? Do you know?
Well, that's a good question. A lot just depends on who gets their plan done first.
Okay.
I believe I said it was 60 days. It might be 90 days, but the Act 47 board has either 60 or 90 days from when their contract is signed. And by the way, the coordinators were appointed at the end of January. Here we are at the beginning of March now. They still don't have a signed contract with the state. So technically, the clock hasn't started ticking yet. So whenever that contract is signed, they'll have, and I'll go with 90 days here, they'll have 90 days to get their plan in place, to get their plan formulated. When that plan is formulated, again, this is Act 47, that goes to City Council for approval. There'll be a public hearing. That'll certainly be a circus. That'll be a lot of fun to attend. And there may still be some horse trading going on. We're looking at maybe July or August, I'd say.
Okay, but so in order to make this work, there's going to have to be some changes. So one thing it could be is that money comes in from somewhere else, from the suburbs, from the state, from the federal government, somewhere else to pay for this.
I don't think the federal government would be involved.
That's one direction. Another direction is that there'll be more cuts. There'll be cuts of services. For example, you mentioned in the outline here, privatization of services, especially garbage. Now, would that mean that we would then pay for our garbage pickup?
Right.
There'd be a garbage bill in addition to our sewage bill and water bill and all the other bills. So essentially, it's a tax. It's like a tax hike for residents to pay for, the deficit.
Well, yeah, that's two. First of all, Mayor Murphy says, there just aren't any more cuts that can be made. And maybe we'll get to this laundry list of recent cuts and really services are cut to the bone. You may not notice it now, But I pretty much guarantee as the summer wears on, we'll notice that the streets aren't being cleaned so much, the garbage isn't being picked up as often, things like bulk refuse, that's been cut back to once a month, street cleaning's been cut back to once every other week from once a week. Of course, the pools will be closed, things like that. So cutting services and even cutting personnel, except maybe for firefighters, which is a separate issue, that there doesn't seem to be a lot of room for that. What we need and what the mayor wants is the right granted by the state, generally the state legislature, to impose more taxes, whether on city residents or on commuters. Now, the great thing about Act 47 is, and the reason the mayor is so keen on it, the recommendations that are made under Act 47 in the recovery plan, they'll go to a common pleas court judge who will have to approve them and probably will. And those taxes are instituted in essentially an emergency situation, and they're pretty much guaranteed. That's a way to circumvent the state legislature. And again, that's another reason for the oversight board. The state legislature wanted to maintain some control in this process.
But that can only be a tax on city residents, right? That couldn't be. Could that be a tax on commuters?
Occupational tax that you hear so much about, the $10 tax that hasn't changed since the 1960s. Mm. That's one of the taxes subject to an increase that would be approved by the courts rather than the legislature.
Okay, so the Act 47 board will presumably come up with some sort of package of new revenues and cuts in expenses, and then the city council has simply a yes or no vote? Is that it? The package has to be accepted in toto, or is there some amount of dickering that can go on there?
Well, first of all, yes, the plan has to be approved in full. They can't. There's no line item veto or anything like that. They can't pick and choose.
What if the council says no?
Yeah, exactly. If the council says no, I've got my little timeline here. It gets confusing.
I see.
So
there's a flow chart here somewhere.
Here it is. Well, first of all, even if council says yes, it goes to the mayor, and the mayor could possibly veto it.
I see.
And then it has to go back to council to be overridden.
So that part is just like an act of the city legislature.
Right. And that actually is one of the strengths of Act 47. Once it gets passed by council, it becomes an ordinance. It becomes a law of the city, and it has to be followed. So all of those economic recommendations, the painful cuts, the revenue increases, they have to be done.
Is the city allowed to abrogate contracts? So if the city were to declare bankruptcy, then contracts would be vacated. What happens with this distressed city status?
Well, first of all, declaring bankruptcy is different from the distressed city status. That's a separate issue, which I do want to address in a second. No, contracts that are in force now can't be touched.
I see.
However, another strength of Act 47, and to some degree the Oversight Board as well, and what everybody's praying for, the legislators are praying for, is that they get some kind of leverage against the unions, in particular the police and fire unions, which are protected by Act 111. That's the state act. Under that act, it bars police and fire from striking, but on the other hand, it gives them the right to collective bargaining. And the way, without getting into details, the collective bargaining process has been kind of shaped in a way that benefits greatly the police and firefighters. The police and firefighter budget combined is the largest budget item in the city's budget. I mean, that's what has to be wrestled with the most. What we want, what the city wants in whatever recovery plan comes up, is the right, once the current contracts expire in 2005 and 2006, a stronger position in bargaining, the right to say, look, you know, we basically don't have to abide by the arbitrator's ruling. You know, we want to say in this and a way to cut back on manpower or hours, salaries, anything like that, just some way to cut into the public safety budgets.
So I guess this really gets to one of the main questions, the thing that's debated very hotly, which is exactly why is the city in the situation that it's in? I think there's a lot of attitude that you hear on the conventional commercial radio, which has a very distinct right-wing bias, is that, well, you know, the city brought this on itself and it completely deserves its own problems and tough. So the question is, you know, what is the truth of the matter? What, you know, why is the city in trouble? Why are these contracts the way they are, and what can be done about them? What is the source of the financial difficulties we're having? For example, people like to quote that the stadiums are the reason why the city is bankrupt and so on. I wonder if you could comment on that, Chris.
Well, I'm glad you brought up right-wing radio so we can dismiss them out of hand and be done with it. Certainly, it's not anybody's fault, any single party's fault. There are a lot of reasons for Pittsburgh being where it is. It's not even Mayor Murphy's fault. And actually, I've heard in the past couple of months, I've heard some good anecdotes or getting back to the firefighters again, kind of a good anecdote about how everybody's blaming the mayor for cutting a deal with the firefighters at the last mayoral election in exchange for their support. And of course, he only won by, what, about 700 votes. It was a very slim margin.
You hear that in the primary, right?
The Democratic primary against Bob O'Connor, and you hear that bandied about all the time, that the mayor cut a deal with the firefighters. Well, there are also people saying that the firefighters first cut a deal with O'Connor, and then the mayor didn't have any choice. Or conversely, you hear that the firefighters agreed to support O'Connor with no deal in place, and then the mayor stepped in and cut the deal. So,
well, there's bound to be
just
a lot of finger
always,
pointing, but
it's
the
always
fact
going
is
to be
that
like
we're,
that.
We're
right.
under some sort of a contract that can't, in which the firefighters have no layoff. But it's not completely clear to me whether that's like the main source of the difficulty.
No. I mean, okay. So, historically,
Mayor Murphy spent quite a lot of money, for example, on the Lazarus Building downtown. I think it was $18 million, if I'm not mistaken. So that seemed to be a discretionary expense that one could argue about.
Right. Yeah. Well, that was a mistake. There's no question. Mistakes have been made by the mayor. I think generally, though, from what I've read and what I've heard, for the past 20 years, 15 or 20 years, all the mayors have just passed the buck. Everybody's recognized that there are these kind of structural problems with the budget. We're too reliant on property taxes. Too many companies have gotten exemptions from the business privilege tax. There are a variety of financial problems that could have been addressed 15 years ago, 20 years ago, they weren't. The buck was passed. Now, Mayor Murphy's been in office for 3 terms now. Maybe he should have taken care of it or tried to address it maybe in the second term. But finally in the third term, for whatever reason, it's come to a head. It's on his head. I said historically you can just look at the demographic situation. Since 1960, the city's lost 45% of its population. We now have 75% of county residents living outside the city of Pittsburgh. That's a complete turnaround from 40 years ago. We used to, Pittsburgh used to have 2/3 of the population, so we had more power. I mean, just suburbanites demand their due, I guess you'd say, and we're paying for it now.
So you had gone to a luncheon at the League of Women Voters luncheon, right, in which Murphy and Honorado talked about the process of thinking about merging city and county together.
Well, that was also certainly for Pennsylvania and for Pittsburgh, that was historic. I mean, that's been talked about for generations, and everybody's agreed that you can't say the R word in Pittsburgh politics. You can't say regionalism. You can't suggest that the city and the county or the outer counties work together. But push has come to shove, and in particular, you may have heard a week earlier, Buffalo's mayor and Buffalo's whatever county is surrounding Buffalo, their head of the county, they made the same announcement. The mayor of the city of Buffalo said he's prepared to dissolve the city government and merge.
So, what is the proposal here in Pittsburgh then that Honorado was making?
There is no specific merger proposal. I mean, Honorado says, well, maybe it'll be like Louisville, Kentucky. Maybe we'll do it like Indianapolis. I would think that would mean making Allegheny County, making the whole county Pittsburgh, calling it Pittsburgh. I've seen this proposal already, doing away with the name of the county, Allegheny, calling it all Pittsburgh. I mean, that would be extreme, but it could happen. But certainly, just like Louisville, just like Indianapolis did it, they started by sharing services. One little piece we just heard today, we heard it on the news at 6 o'clock, the 911 merger, which has been talked about for 3 or 4 years. Finally, this Act 47 panel made an interim recommendation that finally be pushed forward, and it looks like there'll be a vote on it tomorrow. So when you get one little piece like that, then you get something like, the city and the county each have their own sign shop. That'll be merged. The city and the county each have asphalt plants. We'll make that one. Police crime investigations, that'll become one body run by one entity.
So that has two advantages. That the idea of, first of all, consolidating services to make things more efficient, and also
right.
the idea that people who are living farther away will have to share in some of the expenses of operating a city with
right.
lots of old infrastructure, lots of poor people, lots
of
other
needs. So the Jerry Boyers of the world are certainly against that idea.
To me, that's the sticking point. I mean, I think it's easy to explain why merging is good for the city. It's a little more difficult to explain why it's good for a suburban community. But the argument I think that's made, and it's a little more esoteric, is that it's you have to think regionally these days. I mean, if Pittsburgh merged, would become the seventh. Would go from the 55th largest city to the seventh largest city in the country. That's Indianapolis managed to really make hay out of that. They got themselves a professional sports team when they grew, ostensibly grew bigger. They were able to project themselves as a player.
This is left out on WRCT. Let me give you a phone number. It's 412-621-9728. You can give us a call. And we're talking to Chris Sorosky about city financial issues. Do you have anything more to say to wrap this one up? So
I wanted to continue on this point about whether regionalism will solve the problem. So the idea then, I guess, as I understand it, would be that the city government would just become the county government would essentially take over the city government. There would be no separate city government. Is that more or less the idea?
Right. There was an op-ed in the Post-Gazette a couple of weeks ago. Bob Cranmer, former county commissioner, he had an interesting proposal. I'm sure there are many of them out there, but his proposal was to turn the whole county of Allegheny into a five-community governance system. You know, we would have five school districts, we'd have five police forces, and I think that's what it will become. It's consolidation. When you consolidate, you have what is it called? You save money by pooling your resources,
There certainly would seem to be some efficiencies.
Did he draw the boundaries
efficiencies,
for his plan?
Yes.
I mean, did he draw the boundaries in that plan?
They were sketchy.
Yeah, I think the problem is there are so many municipalities. It's difficult to imagine dismantling them. Mm-hmm. I think we have a caller. Please go ahead.
Hello, it's Noel Walkington here.
Hi,
I'm
Noel.
In Squirrel Hill, a colleague of Bob and Danny's. I'd like Chris to tell us a little bit about the cost structures of the city. Our taxes are very, very high here, both in Pennsylvania and in the city. And somehow or other cities manage to provide services, etc., on significantly lower cost per person, cost per total cost.
Right.
Can you explain to us the of the city budget, where are our costs? Why are they so high, or why can't we provide these, like other cities do? There's something wrong with the cost structure here.
Right. Off the top of my head, I would say the part of it, again, it's kind of historic. The city has already cut 900 jobs in the past 10 years, 900 city worker positions. And there were just more cuts in August, and I'm given to understand that through the 70s and maybe into the 80s, at least into the 70s, a lot of these city jobs were actually funded under federal programs. I guess that stemmed from the Johnson administration and the Great City program, something along those lines. And I think it just is taking a long time for the city government structure to shrink the same way the population is shrinking. And other cities it's happened faster in other cities. That's all. And now we've reached a point where it has to be forced, where the city has to shrink, the governance has to shrink to the size of the population being served. And there's just a disconnection between the two right now.
Oh, okay. So you'd suggest that maybe the cost of the services that we're providing are no more, say, per policeman, per fireman, per garbage man, per anything else. Our costs are no higher than other cities.
So we're talking about the unions.
I don't care about unions. Other cities have unions as well, right? But I'm just, dollar for service, service per dollar.
What is the statistic you're referring to? Are you saying that, for example, for each resident, the garbage collection charge amortized over the averaged over the residents is, say, $10 a month in Pittsburgh versus $5 a month in Phoenix? Is that what kind of the statistic you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, say those are important numbers. What do you know? Other people have lower taxes.
Right. Well, I think.
And they provide similar services. So what's going wrong in Pittsburgh? We pay high taxes. Why can't we get the services right?
You know, I think you can put a lot of it on the unions, blame it on the unions. But I don't like using the word blame. I mean, the Teamsters, the police, the fire, they've done good jobs for their constituents. You know, they've bargained well with the city. The city gives in because it's useful at election time. And we've gotten to the point now where, you know, we have many more, for instance, the firefighters. We have many more firefighters than we need. They work more hours than they have to. There are more stations that are open than need to be open. And the same, you know, you talk about the garbage collection. That's the Teamsters bargaining with the city. They know how to bargain. And they've gotten good contracts for their employees. Now as far as privatizing the garbage collection goes, that's an okay idea, but there's a stipulation in the garbage hauler's contract that if it's privatized, all their contracts go with that new deal. So, you know, what private hauler is going to want to assume all of these city contracts? Now, granted, when they expire, then there's an opening, but until they expire, they travel with whatever new arrangement is made.
Okay, so somehow or other, in spite of the fact other cities have got unions,
somehow or other
they managed to get a better deal out of them. But are they paid extremely highly, our workers, compared with anybody else? Is it unreasonable, significantly more than, say, St. Louis or Cincinnati?
Yeah, the garbage haulers I'm not sure about, but I think certainly the firefighters are.
I see. So that's one side of the other one that Mayor Murphy brings up all the time is the large percentage of nonprofits in the city. I mean, how much of that is a factor, do you think, in the problems on the income side of not recovering any tax money from that?
Yeah, well, that's a huge it's a huge issue. The 40% of the land in the city is controlled by nonprofits and is not taxable. And again, you know, it's funny, kind of like the firefighters. What is it? I believe it's Act 75. I don't know if I have the number right, but there was state legislation back around 1997 that kind of reinforced the notion that the nonprofits had a right to be exempt from taxes. Before 97, they were making these what are called payments in lieu of taxes,
right?
The pilots.
Yeah.
Once the courts determined that they really were fully exempt or that they were protected, those payments dried up. There is a plan being floated right now by the business community that says that the nonprofit should be paying about $3 million a year to the city to help pay down the budget. Well, don't forget, we're $40 million in debt. That's nothing,
mm-hmm.
$3 million.
I see. So you don't think it's a big factor? I think it's, for me, that's one of the biggest arguments for regionalism is that these nonprofits, like, for example, the hospitals or the universities, me sitting at one, mm-hmm. are really a service for the region. I mean, if you're living somewhere else in Allegheny County and you need heart surgery, chances are you're going to be coming to Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh is actually subsidizing that service by not charging that tax.
And the university has... There's been numerous spinoffs from Carnegie Mellon in
for
particular,
example,
and Pitt as well. Many spinoffs for corporations which have added to the economic growth of the area.
Well, that's their argument, that they're a job creator, right?
All right. Well, thank you for the call, and
thanks, Mel.
Thank you, Chris. We're going to take a brief break, and we'll come back and talk about the Union of Concerned Scientists, and if we have time, for the coup in Haiti. If you'd like to call us, the number is 412-621-WRCT 9728. That's 89728 on campus, and we're monitoring electronic mail. Either Robert or Bob at leftout.info is email address, and we'll get your mail then. Thanks for listening. Mm-hmm.
WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM, every Wednesday at 6 p.m. for total information awareness for a rundown of the week's technology news. We'll bring you insightful commentary on topics ranging from spam to security to the stock market and the bug of the week in your calls. Total information awareness, making sure you know what John Ashcroft was doing last night.
Remember that kid you picked on in high school? Guess what? They gave me a radio show. Viva La Mock happens every Friday night right here on WRCT starting at 9 p.m. What else could I say about it? It's the coolest thing ever.
I'm your pal, buddy, can you spare a dime?